Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Dental Practice Heroes podcast. I'm excited to have an episode with just a cool guy. Just a really cool guy, smart guy, great thinker. And you'll just hear it in his voice, in his ideas. You'll just see this problem solving, never stop getting better mentality. And just a level of authenticity I don't think we often see in these key opinion leaders that are out here talking about what they do. And I think this is somebody who truly walks the walk and is here to share and here to help people. And we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. I know this was a hard episode for me to title because it went so many different ways, but I loved every second of it. It was a really enjoyable interview for me and somebody that I respect and I think has got some really good ideas and is doing a really nice thing for the industry. So let's quit talking about them. Let's get to this interview. I know you're going to love it.
The Dental Practice Heroes Podcast, where successful dentists share their best systems, methods, and lessons learned to help you achieve early financial freedom through profitable practice ownership. We're here to talk about operating a successful dental business through communication, strong leadership, and by being the hero for your patients and your team.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Dental Practice Heroes podcast, where we believe that armed with knowledge and intentionality, anyone can become the hero that their practice needs and deserves. I'd like to welcome my guest, a general dentist, practice owner of a cosmetic and adhesive-driven office in Jupiter, Florida, accomplished clinician and creator of The Protocol, which is a course helping dentists to actually implement the high-level restorative skills in their practices that they learn from CE. Please welcome to the podcast, Dr. Rob Ritter. What's happening, Rob? How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, Paul. Really, I've been a big fan listening to you for a while on your pods, and just great to be here with you. Spend some time.
Awesome, man. I'm really excited to like talk about our topic because I just think it doesn't get talked about a lot. Just the idea of we're taking courses, but how do we implement this stuff into our practices? And courses are not. It could be all in four. It could be orthodontics. It could be cosmetic work. It could just be regular, just bread and butter dentistry, but it's all these things. It all applies. Before we get to that, I just want to let's tell the listeners your journey into practice ownership and just like how you got into, you've been doing it a long time. How you got into ownership? How is your practice different now than it was today? How'd that all evolve to where you are today?
All right. I'll try to keep it brief because I've been doing it now. This is my 30th year, which is wild to me. It doesn't feel like it at times, but it is 30. So I came out of dental school. And the truth is, after we came out of dental school, me and my wife graduated together. My wife's a dentist. I met her the first day of dental school. Didn't know her beforehand. Graduated, moved down to Florida. And when I got started in dentistry, I was in a couple of HMO practices back when they were unfortunately very popular back in the early 90s. And within about 6 or 9 months, I burned out. I came home. I quit my jobs. I told my wife I want to get out of dentistry, which was kind of sad because it was always my goal to be a dentist. And then she said, take some time off and figure it out what you want to do. And then I found a practice where I went into as his associate. And I eventually, not long thereafter, a year and a half later, I bought him out. And then I transformed that practice into the type of practice that I really wanted it to be. Now, along the way, I had one associate, didn't work out. And then I brought in my now partner, Chris Ramsey, who was my associate for 4 years before we decided to build our own kind of dream practice and own the real estate, that sort of thing, build it the way we wanted to build it. But along the way, it was always continuing educationally driven, meaning I knew that I needed to learn a hell of a lot more than with the skills that I graduated dental school from. What's really interesting is some of my classmates are still doing the same thing that they learned 30 years ago. And if it works for them, that's fine. But that was never going to be good enough for me. So along the way, I did all of the Dawson courses. I did all of the Spear courses before they moved out to Scottsdale, where I actually went to even Frank's office to do some of his in-office courses. He kind of gave me an idea of what the protocol would turn into. And then I did the COIS continuum, and I finished that a good 10, 12 years ago as well. And then me and Chris, we actually did the COIS thing together, which was unheard of, where two dentists would leave their practice and then go out to Seattle for the week. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, how can you do that? Blah, 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 blah. And it seems to have always paid off for us. The thing that we always noticed along the way was that dentists would go out to these wonderful courses and then they wouldn't implement what they learned. And even today, we went to a conference a couple of months ago and there were people there who were COIS graduates who were showing some of their work and they didn't even follow the principles that they learned from John Coy, Sir Frank Spear. And I said, this is why we teach the protocol, because you have to be able to take that information and go back to your practice and make it work for you. Otherwise, you're either wasting your time or wasting your money, and you're not servicing and benefiting your patients the way they should be serviced and benefited. So it's been an interesting journey. We started the protocol 4 years ago. It's not like any other CE course out there, Paul. It's a two-day course. It's in our office. We have 16 people. It's not hands-on where we're working on models, but it is interactive. We do breakout sessions into our oversized operatories and do live chair-side digital consultations where you can actually hear what we say to the patient after reviewing all the clinical findings. And we love technology, and we show everybody all the technology that we utilize, which does give us a little bit of a different look and feel in our office, yet it's not a substitute for care, skill, or knowledge. So it's been an interesting path. I've been partners with Chris for 20 years, and we're a 50-50 partner in the practice and in the protocol. And even that, we get a lot of questions about, because most partnerships don't last in dentistry for two reasons. And you know what the two reasons are, don't you?
I don't. I'm just saying it's too hard to have two cooks in the kitchen. That's my only response to that. But what is it?
Actually, Paul, that was interesting. There was a famous dentist who said, we went to a certain function over 21 years ago, and we said, everybody, oh, we're becoming partners in real estate and everything. And this famous dentist said it would never work. You can't have two chefs in the kitchen. You can't have two kings in a castle or two lions on the Serengeti. And of course, we went into this to prove him wrong, which we did, which you'll never admit. No, the reason partnerships fail is two reasons. Number one is money. Number two is ego.
Mm. Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. So you have to put the entity first before you put your name first. And you have to say, what are we going to do at sometimes a detriment to ourselves to make the entity better and whole and grow it? And then if that trickles down to you, then that's great. And so sometimes it benefits Chris. Sometimes it benefits me. Sometimes it benefits both of us. And sometimes it's a negation on both of us. But that's part of the journey over 20 plus years of being partners.
Yeah, that's interesting that you guys have done it so successfully, because, I mean, people do it where it works out. But it's rare that you ever find somebody that's really, I'm glad I did this. I like my partner. I feel like a lot of people that are partnering up, there's always that part in the back of their mind. They're always like, yeah, I don't know how this is going to, they're not really pot committed for the long haul. There's like that part, there's still that like foot out the door, like maybe this isn't what it is. And I think it just speaks to your guys' level of communication skills, which is translates into like your protocol and what you guys are doing for dentistry. I'm just curious. We just had a full day quarterly meeting at our office. And I tell my clients to do this all the time. We worked on patient coming in, standing up, greeting the patient. We worked on bringing the patient back, how the room is set up, the things that we say, the way what's on the TV. It sounds to me that this is, you also see value in kind of maybe choreographing this patient experience as they move through your office. Would that be accurate?
That'd be beyond accurate. That is hitting the nail on the head. Yes. Let me break it down even further. We were both in the service industry. Did you ever work in the service industry,
yeah,
Paul?
Yeah, restaurants. Yeah. Yeah, restaurants. And then I sold cell phones.
Okay. The funny part about that is we used to say that if Ramsey was not a dentist, he could be like the biggest regional manager of a cell phone company, because he, a guy can almost sell ice to an Eskimo. But a lot of the things that we learned along the way were in the service industry. We both worked as in restaurants. And then we did break that down into front of the house and back of the house. And so we each concentrate on a different area. He takes care of front of the house, the way it looks, the way it feels, the patient interaction. I take care of back of the house things. Ordering, structure, I take care of, let's say, SEO, all the things that you don't see. It's like Disney World, right? He worked at Disney World and I worked at Busch Gardens too. The things that you don't see are the hallways behind where they're moving all the materials around and all of the characters are walking around. All of that stuff we don't want you to see in the practice. We just want you to walk into a clean, safe, beautiful environment that doesn't look or function like your typical medical facility or even somebody else's dental practice across the street. And yes, the way that we greet somebody, look them in the eye, shake their hand, give them a tour of the office, show them the technology, interact with them, listen. Most importantly, listen, understand their concerns. There's a lot of body language that my partner actually talks about, which is really cool in our course. Spends a couple hours on body language and human interaction. All of those things lends itself to being different than everybody else in town. Because if you're going to be like everybody else, you're not going to stand out. You're not. You have to offer something and be able to provide a service that is different and or better than everybody else to where you are the talk of the town. And what we have done is create a brand over 20 years to where people say they're at a party. Oh, you don't go see Ritter and Ramsey? Oh, I heard those guys' names over here and over here. We want that. We want that brand to go beyond our walls, right? It's not just what we say. It's not just what we do. It's what other people are saying outside of the four walls of the practice.
Yeah. And I love that you say that. Now, what would you say as far as like if a dentist, they're graduating with a lot of debt. There's a lot of ex-dental students that are just associate dentists. They say, I can't open up my practice. It's just the debt's too much. And then we also have a lot of dentists that may have want this type of practice, want to provide this level of care. But at the same time, they say, well, I just got to get a little bit more revenue. I got to get a little bit more busy before I spend more time with my patients. I'm running the PPO mill. I'm doing volume. I mean, what would you say to someone who says like this type of practice is a unicorn this day and age? Like you can't even do this anymore. What would your answer to that be?
I think what I would say to them is it can be done. It's just more challenging as time goes on, right? It is. The type of practice that me and my partner have built didn't come overnight. That's been a constant work in progress. I still don't funny think that we're where we want to be, right? Yeah. So we never said we're at that destination. It's a constantly moving journey. And then we move the goalposts every now and then. We change where we want to wind up because life is not a straight line. It does zigzag. I think it's more challenging for the younger dentist now. There's no question about it. What I have learned in life is you never lose with education, ever. You never lose with education. So if you want to increase your production, right now, there are so many different types of courses and so many disciplines that were not available 20 years ago. If you want to start taking out teeth and doing implants, there's at least, I know, three places off the top of my head that I could direct somebody to go. Same thing goes to do more Invisalign, right? If you want to do injectables, there's a course for that. You want to learn how to do composites and do better photography, there's a course for that. You can't lose with education. And then what you're able to do is go back to your practice, increase your skill set, which increases your numbers in production. And when you see that you become unconsciously competent to be able to provide those services, that gives you the confidence to go out and say, either I'm going to buy a small office or I'm going to do a startup in an ever-growing area where I know where I'm going to grow with the community. And that would be my recommendation to young dentists right now. I don't think that going into like my area, Paul, I don't know if I shared with you the demographic, but we still have a little bit of an area where people come down from the North and the Midwest for 4 to 6 months. So between Jupiter and Palm Beach Gardens, the population will swell to about 180,000 people. Not exactly a huge metropolis. I want you to guess how many general dentists there are in Jupiter, Palm Beach Gardens, Sequesta, North Palm Beach.
I'm going to say 180,000. Let's go 300, 200.
We're over 200 now.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a starry sky. How do you stand out?
Well, that's the key, right? So you have to be different. You have to have an office that people will talk about you without you having to thump your own chest. Now, if you've been around town for a while and you're involved in activities outside of the office, inside the office, you have a team that understands that building your presence and your brand is critical to your long-term success, that's one thing. If you're just the average general dentist in town, I can tell you what happens because I see it. You wind up doing procedures on patients that you are not trained for because let's face it, you have large student loan debt, you have large practice debt, you have large overhead. So you wind up doing dentistry, not great, and then it becomes a mill where patients come in the front door, out the back door, they transfer to other offices, and you hope that nothing negative happens. That's really what it becomes. Some of the people who have done that approach have done very, very well. They're younger dentists who have been out for, say, less than 10 years, who have huge production numbers, not the type of dentistry that we provide, yet it seems to be okay for a certain population. And then other people are struggling. And that's what happens when there's not enough patients, when you do a certain type of dentistry. So I think what you have to do is get really good at some sort of pathway, if I'd call it that, that you feel comfortable doing, providing that service, and then stand out in that area to be the go-to practice for that procedure. That's what I think it is. Or you become what I call the super dentist, which is you go back and train to do implants, extractions, all on fours, endo, doing molar endo, doing Invisalign, and building out your plate of services so that you can handle most of the dentistry without referring it out to your specialists. I just don't see another way right now.
Ever since we started using Relevance Online Marketing, I could see a drastic improvement in our SEO. I mean, we are ranking so much higher when searching for dentists in our hometown. We are seeing more new patients, and certainly someone you should give a look at if you're considering new marketing companies.
Just absolutely awesome. I would recommend Relevance to any practice owner who wants to see what proper marketing can do for their office.
I want to thank Dr. Paul Etchinson for introducing me to Relevance Marketing. They've done a great job, very thorough. I'm happy with the results. Thank you guys for all of your help.
We never truly realized how powerful this could be. It's really changed our business for the best.
I think they're definitely worth every penny. Easy to communicate with, easily accessible, does what I ask, and even shows me some reports when things are going a little bit off track and what they're doing about it. You know, it's just a level of service I just haven't really received from other marketing agencies.
Since we've been using Relevance, we've seen a tremendous growth in our business. I would recommend their services to just about anybody. Search engine optimization and getting your ranking on Google to be the highest it can possibly be. The efforts by Relevance and their team, and the efforts and the things that they've done with the SEO, as well as the social media. Highly recommend it.
So what are you waiting for? This is Dr. Paul Etchison telling you to get a free consultation with Relevance. As a listener of the podcast, you get the first month free, and there is zero obligation to continue if you aren't blown away. Make this the year you grow your practice to the next level. Go to RelevanceOnlineMarketing.com to set up a free consultation. That's RelevanceOnlineMarketing.com.
Do you?
That's great advice. And I think that's why we often see this super generalist, so many people doing this, is because it's trying to be everyone to everybody, everybody to everyone, something like that. But it's like, when I hear you saying this, you've got a certain way of practicing. I'm curious, like you said, when you acquired your practice, you said you transformed it. Was this always the end in mind that you had, or was this something that evolved over your career? You were like, I kind of like doing this. Let's take a pivot and go this way. Well, like, was there a part where you pivot, or is this what you kind of always wanted to do?
It is kind of always what I wanted to do, but there's a caveat in there, Paul. If I had to do it again, I wouldn't.
Interesting.
So let me kind of elaborate on that. I'm really a restorative dentist. I haven't taken a tooth out in probably over 25 years. I haven't done an endo since dental school. I don't do dentures. I don't make partials. I don't see children. Again, I haven't placed an implant. I don't do connective tissue grafts. I don't do that. I'm really a restorative dentist. And what I do is I feed my specialists all of the dentistry. I feed them my endo and my perio and my oral surgeons, the wisdom teeth, and my orthodontist, the complex ortho. I don't do any of that. Having said that, I created that, right? So I own that. I did that. That's what I wanted to do. So I'm there. The problem is that I don't think that's the right way to go these days. I think the right way to go is to go ahead and become what we call now the super dentist, which has a negative connotation to it when it started, but it's not anymore. It's building out your subset of specialties and different modalities that you can add to your practice. And I think it's really, really important that you do that.
Yeah, I agree. I do a lot of procedures, and I get that sometimes say, would you do it on family? I say, absolutely do these procedures on family. Do root canal on my wife. I've done it on my sister-in-law. Place implants on my sister-in-law. All this sort of stuff. And I'm confident in my skills, but I think there's a lot of people that are intimidated by going that way. And there's a lot of people that want to just do bread and butter. They don't want to get out of that comfort zone, which I think everything is okay. But I think in times where we may be struggling at a practice to have a lot of patients, there's nothing, like you mentioned, you're always going to get something out of CE, learning new skills. It's never going to bite you in the ass.
I don't think so.
So this idea with the practice that you have, we're creating this experience. What role does leadership play into this, into getting the team involved? Like, why is it important for you as the leader to be the director, to be the voice? I mean, talk to what you see as leadership playing a role into creating this practice that you've created.
Without a clear vision at the top, what can happen is your team doesn't know what to do. They need to be guided. in a way, I hate to compare them to children. When you have children, you have to set up very clear boundaries with children, showing them what's right and wrong. Children want structure. They want structure. Believe it or not, they love structure. And that's the way a practice has to function if you want it to be successful. It needs structure. It needs leadership. It needs constant guidance. Remember, I said it's not the destination, it's the journey. It's tweaking things, turning the knobs, so to speak, and dialing it in. And that takes constant course corrections. And if you don't have somebody at the top leading that band, leading that march in that direction, it becomes rudderless. People don't know what to do. They don't know what right and wrong is. They don't know if what they're doing for the patient is exactly what you want them to be. So you have to be very clear with your team members of the type of practice that you want to get to, that you eventually want to get to. And I don't know how long it's going to take you to get there. I've seen people transform their practices in less than a year, and I've seen other people take them 5 years to get there. I don't really think the time is all that important as long as you are on the right path and doing the things that you want to do. For me and my business partner, I took leadership courses early on when I first became the owner of my first practice, which is 27, 28 years ago, because I didn't know what I was doing. I admitted it. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have any education. When I went to college, my college degree is a biology degree. I didn't take a business class. I don't have an HR department in our practice. I had to learn all of those things along the way. So I had to take courses to become a better leader, to understand financial obligations, to understand hiring of potential team members, and then eventually scoping out with my business partner the type of practice we wanted to evolve into, which took us a long time to get there. Now, we are doing the things that we want to do right now, and I don't want to say we're peaking, but we're finally at the point where we're doing really the dentistry that we want to do. And in fact, so much so that I don't have time for the other types of dentistry anymore. I need to hire an associate. I need to hire an associate. And I think an associate that came into my practice that was the so-called super dentist, I didn't have to refer these things out and keep it in-house. Somebody could build a practice within my practice very, very quickly. And at the same time, forget the fact making us more money and keeping it in the practice that allows us to do other things, keeps the patients happy too without having to go to another office. So there's a lot of this constant evolving type of practice mentality that we have, because whenever somebody gets complacent, that's not a good thing. Complacency is not good in a dental practice. My partner likes to say in his lecture that I've heard many times, you're either bread or you're wine. You're either getting stale or you're getting better with age. What is it? Because there's nothing in between. You're either growing or you're dying. And that all starts at the top. That really starts at the top. They look to us as their leaders, and we help guide them to where we all want to go.
Yeah. And I love that you say that, because I've had points in my career where I've become complacent. I've never enjoyed the plateauing. When we reach a capacity point, we've always expanded. We've taken on more providers. But we've gotten to a point maybe about 3 years ago where we just couldn't get any bigger, and it got stale. It was getting stale bread. And now we're going out of networks. And now it's fun again, because now we're saying we are worth it. And we're creating this and communicating to the patients that they are. And I'd say most of them agree and some of them don't. And that's okay too. That's fine. But we're creating the practice that we want.
Can we talk real quickly about going out of network?
Yeah, let's do it.
Is that okay?
Let's go. Yeah, this is very pertinent to me. We just dropped Delta less than 6 months ago.
You did. Okay. So Delta is obviously large, and in certain areas, extremely large. There's people here with Delta, but it's not as big here where I live or practice as other parts of the country. So let me say that up front, because let me tell you the other thing when you listen to people on podcasts or lectures, specifically lectures, I always say this, it's not what they tell you, it's what they don't tell you. So they paint a rosy picture for you, but then you ask them privately, and it's a completely different story than what they're telling you from the podium, which drives me out of my mind. There was a guy years ago, he was doing all these smile cases. I'm like, geez, this guy's got the best practice, right? And I find out he's taking insurance. And I remember saying to him at the time, privately, oh, I didn't know you took insurance. You do this with insurance fees? He goes, yeah. I go, you didn't tell anybody that. He said to me, literally, they didn't ask. And I thought to myself, wow, how disingenuous can you be from the podium?
Yeah.
Wow, you're not helping anybody. Nobody. Needless to say, we're not friends anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I don't hang out with people like that. So let me tell you our journey. Let's also categorize it this way, right? There's in-network, there's OON out-of-network, and there's FFS, fee-for-service. I consider them to be three separately distinct entities. Would you agree with me on that, Paul?
Absolutely.
Let's break that down. In-network, you're on a list. People can pick you out. You do a greatly reduced pro fee. Your fees are reduced anywhere from between 5 and 25%. That's being in-network. Out-of-network, you accept every insurance, not being HMO, you accept every one of the insurances, except that you're not on a list and you charge your regular fee. Then you have fee for service. Fee for service to me is your real fee. The patient pays everything on day of treatment. You submit the insurance for them and the insurance cuts them back the check. That's fee for service. I do not participate in a plan, PPO, and I don't have a fee for service practice. I have an out-of-network practice, meaning we charge our fee. There usually is a copay where the insurance will kick in. The patient pays that. That's the way it works. Now, when we dropped out of in-network, everything about that has to be carefully, meticulously planned and implemented so that you don't have a crash on your hands. And what I've seen other people do is they say, just drop it. You'll be fine. No. That's the fastest way to office suicide is doing that. Don't do that. You have to have a plan in place. Everybody is speaking the same language. Everything must be said exactly the same way from the first person that answers the phone to your clinical assistant, to you as the dentist, to the person checking them out. Everything must be coordinated with the proper terminology so that you do not lose your practice. Mm-hmm. Have you gone through this right now, Paul?
We went through dropping Delta as the very first thing that we've dropped. Well, it wasn't the first thing, but it was the first large one that we dropped, I'd say. We picked off a few little cherries here and there, just smaller ones. But yeah, we did. And I would say we went through it. We trained. We talked about verbiage. We rehearsed it. We went through stuff. And I cannot say that it has been seamless because it has not. It has been a little bit of a bumpy ride. We had, I'd say 85% of the people we talked to booked their 6 months. And then when it came down, Delta in Illinois will not let us take the assignment of benefits. So it's essentially like a fee for service sort of thing. So we're working against that. And I think when it came down to paying fee for service out of pocket and then getting reimbursed by the insurance company, I'd say we retained maybe 40, 50%, maybe a little less. I haven't got the numbers on it. We were in a position, we were busting at the seams at a 11 op practice open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. So we were kind of in this situation that we were lucky that we could really use some empty chairs. So that's why we went with Delta first, because we knew we'd probably lose a considerable portion of them. And I also didn't want to go Delta last because I didn't want to create a patient base of more Delta patients. We were already 33% of patients were Delta. So it's been bumpy, but it's been interesting. And we pivoted and we've learned and we've changed. We've dialed in our verbiage. I like where it is right now. I feel like we're doing a really nice job now, but there were some bumps and bruises along the way.
There are. And so you have to be prepared for that. That's a very interesting scenario where you actually, you needed the room. So it was really a great time to pivot. I like to say the best time to do this was right after COVID, quite honestly.
Yeah.
I think right after COVID, because for those 2 or 3 years, it's stabilizing now a little bit more, obviously. But for the last 2 to 3 years, everybody was used to hyperinflation in this country. Name something that you bought, went, did, that wasn't hyperinflated from before COVID. Everything. Houses went up, interest rates went up, gas went up, cars were almost impossible to buy. Hotels tripled in price, flights tripled in price, everything. Eggs went to $9 a dozen. I mean, it just kept going and going and going. So I said, when we did this 3 years ago, I said, now's the time to do this. Everybody's used to paying more for everything. They're just going to see this as just another extension of, God, it's costing me more to live, which it is. So I said, now's the perfect time to do it. So when we did it, we did the small ones first. Then Delta was not the largest one what we had. I would say it was the second, if not even maybe the third. There was one, I can't think of the name of it. It was an all-encompassing umbrella that what they started to do was acquire the Cignas and the Aetnas and the other ones. I forgot the name, but was it called Premier? I think it was called Premier, but not Delta Premier. They had consumed all of these PPOs. And they were dropping to the lowest common denominator on, let's say, the hygiene. And I finally said, no more. I said, we can't do this. We can't provide the level of care, because that didn't change for us, for the fee-for-service patient that was paying out of pocket with no insurance. And then the person was benefiting and getting the cleaning for 40 to 50% less. I said, no more. We're done. We can't do it. And then, truthfully, we've lost maybe 25 people in the process over the last 3 years. But that's because the wording to the patient before they showed up, during the appointment, and on the way out was critical. And a number one thing I would recommend to people is, if you're going to do this, look online. There's some great resources. I mean, obviously with you, Paul, we call it being in an unrestricted status. So when patient calls up and says, are you on my PPO? The answer is, we accept your PPO. Right now, it's a great thing. We're in an unrestricted status to where we can actually take more insurance than ever before. Yes, we accept your insurance. Patient says, great. Just want to let you know, Mrs. Jones. However, we're not in your network. We can take your insurance. Means you will have a small copay just like you have when you go to your physician's office. And I have to tell you, our new patient count has actually gotten stronger because we're taking more insurances than before.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you phrase it, but then you also are upfront about the out-of-network. I always have the trouble with the whole thing talking about, yes, we do. Yes, do you take my insurance? Of course we do. Of course we do. And I think some patients are asking, can I use my insurance at your practice? The answer is yes. But then some patients, they are asking, are you in my network? And it's hard to know what the difference is. We don't want to like draw attention to it, but at the same time, I kind of agree that I think we have to say it. Then that's what we do.
I wouldn't lead with it.
Yeah, we don't lead with it. Absolutely.
Otherwise, it goes back to what I said, right? It's not what they're telling you when they're not telling you. Because the worst thing you could do is pretend like you're in their network. And then when they go to check out, they get a bill. And they're like, wait a minute, I thought I get two free cleanings. This way, if that does happen, and it does happen, but not often, Paul. I'm not going to tell you it does or doesn't. It does happen, but not often. It's like, Mrs. Jones, we told you we're in an unrestricted status, meaning we do accept your insurance. The difference is, instead of you getting the cleaning for free, there's a copay with it. And it could be, I don't know, Paul, let's make this up, say it's $35. And if she balks a little bit, they come and get me or my partner, and I'll tell you exactly what we say to them. I say, Mrs. Jones, let me ask you a question. You go to get your hair done, how often? She says, every 6 weeks or 8 weeks. Great. Mrs. Jones, if I told you that you had to pick from a list to get your hair done, would you do that? And she says, no. Said, so that's for your hair that grows back every 6 to 8 weeks. Why would you take a chance on a healthcare provider that you're only coming to twice a year?
I like that.
And you know what? That's the end of the problem right there. Because what we do, a lot of people are uncomfortable doing, which is meeting that head on and saying the things to the patients that they need to hear. My partner, I got to give him credit for this one. When somebody balks at something in the office, like, I don't want my blood pressure today. He goes, hey, it's not a haircut. This is a medical facility. We're not doing this for our health. We're doing it for your benefit. And we've caught a few people that have exceptionally high blood pressure that had to go to the hospital. If we didn't screen them, they wouldn't know. My point being is this. It's not about us. It's about doing the right thing for the patient. So if that means upfront explaining to them, meaning what out of network means versus being in network or fee for service, I have no problem explaining it. You just got to make sure that it's a coordinated effort, that everybody on your team is saying the same thing. Because remember, as a human being, when something new is explained to you, you need to hear it 16 times before it's registered. 16 times.
Hey there, dental heroes. This is Dr. Dune from Colorado Surgical Institute, and I wanted to let everyone know that we have some awesome developments for our June 6th through 8th course. First, you know, we're going to be doing our full arch course, the whole photogrammetry, lateral sinuses, block grafting, you name it, with anything complex. We're going to be doing that with the entire digital workflow. And I'm also thrilled to introduce our pterygoid and zygoma experience. We have Dr. Riyad Al-Masri coming in. He is a phenomenal surgeon. He does very complex surgeries, and he's amazing to the point where he can explain and teach while he does these live patient surgeries on nasally intubated patients. And so we're going to have an observational day where you get to come and watch one of the best surgeons in the world do his thing here, and that's going to be on June 5th. Please reach out to us and call and text 970-420-6148. ask for Chris Richards. He's going to be our director of the program, and he will help get you set up for anything that you're interested in.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I love the analogy with the hairdresser. I'm going to take that back. We're having a team meeting Wednesday, and that will be part of it.
I'll let you take full credit for that one.
All right, let's move on to the segment where we share little systems that add up to big results. Dr. Ritter, what is your little system?
Well, we got everybody an Apple Watch.
Huh.
You know why? Because now, you know there's a walkie-talkie feature on the watch. Have you ever used it, Paul?
I didn't know that, no.
Okay.
I'm an Android guy.
So what we used to do years ago is we used to walk around with the headsets, look like Liberty is walking with the little battery cord attached to it with the power pack. And of course, you get up and you get caught on a wall or on a door handle and you rip it apart and it kept breaking. Drove us crazy. Apple Watch comes out. And if you take a look at your Apple Watch, there's a yellow walkie-talkie section that you can add everybody to. By hitting the walkie-talkie, you can say, Dr. Ritter, our patient is ready to have their crown seated in room 4 without having to come get me or interrupt me in something else. And then you can just beep back on your watch and say thanks. So we just bought everybody an Apple Watch. And that's how we communicate.
Now, is it audible or is it in still like a Bluetooth headset or is it, it just comes right out of the watch?
Just on the watch.
So just got to watch what you say, I guess.
Well, yeah, we keep it brief.
There's rules.
There's no long conversations, right? It's just, Dr. Ritter, I need you in operatory 2 for hygiene exam. Dr. Ritter, I need you in the small op for crown seat. Dr. Ritter, patient is scanned and ready for the consultation, oversized op. That's all it is. It's brief. And then you could hit the button. Have you not seen it, Paul? Really?
No, I haven't. Both of my girls have Apple Watches. Actually, all three of my girls have Apple Watches.
Yeah, it's a yellow signal. It just says walkie-talkie. And then you just add everybody to it.
Gosh, you know what's funny is, like, I see it because I do the expense report. I have to put in this report to the company that purchased our practice. I see us ordering new walkie-talkies and new headsets often for our big team. And I never ask. I just say, okay, I guess we need them. And I wonder if it would be more cost-effective and there would be more appreciation for, dang, look what I got. People would appreciate to have that.
Yeah. Imagine giving out a gift. I mean, you don't have to get the Ultra Watch, but you get the other ones. I think, I don't know, they're now down to like $159. Give everybody a gift. You add everybody to the Apple Watch and the walkie-talkie with their number. And that's how they communicate. It's so easy. Everybody wears the watch. It's easy. It doesn't break. They charge it at home. Those walkie-talkies, I loved them until they started destroying them. And then it drove me out of my mind.
Yeah, I feel you.
It seemed like every day somebody was coming to me with the earpiece broken, the connection broken, the battery's not working. I couldn't take it anymore.
Well, we've got probably 4 feet of shelf to charge them. You know, we got 4 feet of shelf to charge them. Okay, keep dropping these pearls, man. I'm loving it.
Anytime.
All right, let's move on to the segment where we celebrate that Officer Human and that none of us is perfect. Dr. Ritter, let's get real.
Everybody get down. It's about to get real in here.
What is the biggest struggle at your practice right now, and what are you doing about it?
I've had so many pregnant women, not by me and my business partner. Okay. We are in a role right now where we've literally had 1, 2, 3, the fourth one just went out. The next one's due in April, 5 in a row.
Wow. I feel you.
And of the 4 of them, 3 are hygienists, which is really challenging because we live in an environment right now, finding hygienists to come work is difficult. We could spend an hour on this portion alone, Paul, of what I've just learned, because I don't have that sort of turnover in my practice. My hygienists have been there 5, 6, 7 years, all of them. So 8 years, I don't have that. But they're at the age now where they're all getting married and having children. So they go out for 3 months. So what do you do? Do you hire? For a long time, my business partner didn't want to hire temps. But you can't give away the income of 3 months. You just shut down a hygiene room, because then what are you going to do with those patients?
Yeah.
So that's a problem. Do you hire another hygienist and create a fifth room? We're scrambling right now of reworking our schedules to where when one comes back, one goes out on maternity leave. Opening up Fridays to service more people, hiring another hygienist, and then using a day service, which is a whole nother level of coordination that I had no idea about. Have you ever had to deal with one of these services before,
no,
Paul?
No, never.
I'll give you the short end of it. It's really well done on the computer to where you put the days in that you need. But the scam is and this is what dentists need to know. If the hygienist signs up for, let's say, 2 weeks ahead, they get paid less per hour than if you accept it the day before.
Hmm.
So it screws the business owner scrambling whether you know you're going to have a hygienist or not the day before, because none of them will sign up unless it's the day before.
Why would they do? I'm trying to think of a reason why they would do that from a business perspective on their end.
Because they make more money per hour. They tell the hygienist that instead of making, I'm just going to make up numbers, instead of making $40 an hour, you'll make $45 if you sign up the day before. Whereas if you sign up a week ahead, you'll only make $40 an hour.
Hmm. I'm just wondering why they would incentivize the late sign up.
I'm with you. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. And if anything, you're creating a barrier to access, which is stupid, number one. And then you're alienating the people that want to hire you, which is the dentist who's scrambling for whatever reason. Somebody goes on vacation, somebody gets sick, somebody goes on maternity leave. It's the weirdest, oddest system. And yet I'm beholden to it because finding a hygienist, I can't hire somebody part-time knowing that my hygienist is coming back in 3 months.
Right.
And then I got another one going out right when she gets back.
Mm.
It's my third in a row.
My practice is very young as well. And every time I get told that, I go, gosh, I'm so happy for you. But in the back of my mind, I go, oh gosh, dang it. I've had, and I hope this never happens to you, the maternity leaves where they're like, I'm coming back. Yeah, I'm still going to come back to my old schedule. And then it's the week before and they don't want their old schedule, or they don't want to come back at all. They're going to stay home for a few more months. And it's like, whoa, I had one that it was a week before. It was a week before she was coming back from a 4 month maternity leave, 4 months. And she told us the week before she's not coming back. I said, gosh, I could have hired somebody months ago. That's what worries me.
Paul, I'm literally having this conversation with the two hygienists right now. And I've said to them, you guys are great. I love you. You did a wonderful job. They're great. But you need to let us know right now, are you coming back, number one? And number two, are you coming back for the full 4 days? And what's really interesting is by us asking the question over and over again, I've kind of got out of them. They're both coming back, but they're not coming back for the 4 days. They've worked it out to where they've got help for the baby for 3 days a week. So I said, okay, so you'll come back for three. You'll come back for three. I said, the only thing is you guys got to talk to each other and make sure you're both not taking the same day off. Because now I'm going to go find a hygienist for 3 days a week, one for each of you and one to add another day. I literally learned this yesterday.
But you know, it's interesting just hearing you talk about it, is that the way that you just spoke about using this day service, how you've pivoted, made everything work, and now look at you, you're getting out ahead of this as well.
Yeah. Well, you have to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to be, we would be in such bad shape, because otherwise, how are we going to get new patients in the practice? Again, we could spend a whole hour just on hygiene, because we bring our new patients in through hygiene. If we don't have hygienists there to bring new patients in, how are we going to continue to grow the practice?
You don't.
You don't.
How's your experience been with the services?
You know what? Actually, I'm pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Again, we can go on about this. 3 days in a row, we've had three different hygienists.
Oh, you can't get the same one.
Remember? Because it pays for them not to sign up till the day before.
Oh.
So,
yeah. So they can't just keep bam, 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 bam and just line it up, or they won't.
There's two of them. I'd say book out for the next, we've got the next 2.5 months till our hygienist goes back. Just take those days. Like, no, I don't want to do that because I make less money. Like, oh my gosh.
What a world.
Wow.
What a world.
See, okay. My point is to you and to your listeners. I suffer the same nonsense that we have to put up with as business owners, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
We're all going through it.
Yeah. That's what I tell a lot of my friends are just W-2 normal workers. And I got a few other friends that own businesses, but I tell them all the time, I said, it ain't as perfect as it looks, but it's still worth it. It's still worth it.
You know what it is? It's what I call smile therapy. You're smiling all the time, but behind that smile, they don't really know what's going
on. Yeah, that's true. All right. Here's a great question to follow up on that. If you could go back to the beginning of your career, what do you wish you could tell yourself?
Buy Amazon stock as much as possible.
Yeah.
Buy as many tech stocks as much as possible, because I could probably be retired on my private island by now.
Yeah.
On a serious note, I would say be patient, be able to pivot more, and then take on and become, like I said, I would learn more specialty dentistry earlier in my career. I'm at the end of my career now, Paul. I've been doing this 30 years. I'm on the back nine, as they say here in Florida, because there's so many golf courses, right? I'm on the back nine. So I'm not going to learn how to take teeth out and implants in and do, I'm just not going to do that now. There's just not enough runway for me now. But if I could do it over again, I would have taken on a lot of different specialty modalities. And I would have tried to build a practice that had a lot of dentists providing all those services. And I think we would have had a very different style practice. It would have brought on other issues along the way. I'm not pretending that would be the perfect pathway forward. It would just be a different environment where we'd be in, where it wouldn't be relying just me on Chris of working. We'd have a business. Our business right now is Ritter Ramsey. Our brand is our business is us. And what Craig has done is he's built a business where he doesn't actually have to be there.
That's why Craig Spodek.
Yeah, Craig Spodek, yeah. I think that's really the model that I probably would have followed if I could do it over again.
Yeah, yeah, that's an interesting take on it. I've been doing this, oh gosh, 15 years now. And I feel like I'm on my back nine as far as like printing and digital stuff like that. I'm at the point where it's getting hard not to get into this. I'm starting to feel like I'm turning into a dinosaur. Like, why am I not doing this stuff? And there's part of me that just doesn't want to learn it. I just don't want to.
Well, I do that. We actually have now two mills and a printer. And yeah, I'm doing a lot of that type of dentistry. And I find it so interesting. And I wouldn't call it rewarding. I find it interesting, thought-provoking. There are times it's exciting when it works, but technology fails. And I love where the direction of restorative dentistry is going. It's absolutely what I always wanted dentistry to be. And I think that's one of the reasons why I haven't stopped yet, is because we finally got to the point of doing the dentistry I always thought I wanted to do, but the technology wasn't there. It's like when I was growing up as a kid, I used to read comic books when I was a kid, and I used to shoot model rockets.
Me too. Man, I loved rockets.
That's where my hand skills came from, was rocketry, was building. My brother told me this a couple of weeks ago. We were together, and he goes, you realize why you're so good with your hands, right? He goes, because all those freaking rockets you used to build and launch, he goes, you got your eye-hand coordination from all that. And he was right.
Yeah.
But when I used to read comic books, I thought, oh God, I'd love to see this on the screen. And now all of those comic books I used to read, the people our age grew up to the point where they got to power positions within Hollywood, and they produced these movies from our childhood. And the same thing goes for rockets. You see an Elon Musk who has taken the whole building rocket thing, and without Elon Musk, we have no space program right now. Thank goodness for Elon Musk. And that's what's exciting to me, because now the type of dentistry I wanted to do, we're able to mill and print. Like, I just printed the other day two full arches on toothborne, not implants, not all on four, but toothborne preps, where you can actually, you prep the teeth, scan it, send it to your design software, design it, and then send it to your printer and print it out with temporaries that fit to your margins, not things that you have to reline like shells.
It's awesome.
You're talking about a quantum leap of where we started out doing analog dentistry 20, 25 years ago. So that's what keeps me excited about it.
That's really cool. Yeah, I think I'm going to have to jump in. I just don't, I do more mostly band and bracket ortho. So it's like, I'm just 6 days a month clinically. So it's like, for me to get back into it, I'm hoping like one associate I'm going to get is going to say, hey, let's do this. I'm like, yeah, you do it. Here's your stuff. You figure it all out and you show me how to do it. But we'll see. I feel I could share that sentiment. All right. Share a story where you learned a valuable business lesson from an experience or the hard way.
Well, when I started out in practice, the person said to me early on that, he says, I don't think I can teach you any dentistry, but I can teach you some business. And he said, team, staff, which we don't call them staff anymore, they're all teams, is a journey, not a destination, which is absolutely true. The people I started with are no longer with me. Now, my office manager has been with me 23 years. She predates my business partner, which is kind of cool. She's been there along for the ride. It's really cool. You have to understand that the people that you start with might not necessarily be there with you at the end. Sometimes it happens, but we live in a different time now where people are changing jobs and professions every 5 years, right? That's what's happening. Understanding that the way we do business has completely changed, both from a DSO perspective, private practice perspective, and understanding that your exit strategy, what you think it's going to be now, might not be that way when you leave. And you have to be okay with that. You need to start putting in some circuit breakers in, saying if it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go, it's okay. You have to have a plan B. You have to have a plan B. I'm seeing a lot of my friends who are selling out the DSOs right now, Paul. They are selling out, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. My only thing to anybody that's thinking about doing this is you better make sure you understand how those processes work. And if I were you and you're thinking eventually that you're going to sell to a DSO, I would do everything you could to grow your practice and increase your EBITDA, because that is where they're going to give you your multiplier, and that's how you're going to cash out. So as long as you understand those rules, I don't want to curse, but I used to say they promise you a pot of gold, and then when you get to the other side of the rainbow, what's waiting for you is a crock of poop.
Yeah.
You better know what you're getting into so that you don't wind up with the proverbial crock of shit on the other end of it. If it's done well, and my friends have done very well, it's a great way, right? But you just got to know what it's going to be, because that didn't exist in dentistry when I started 30 years ago. That was not even nobody even knew what that was. I mean, and then about 15 years into it, I heard of Heartland Dental, and I thought, well, that's an interesting concept, and it's completely transformed dentistry. So there's a lot of things that are changing in our profession, and I think to spend the extra time, instead of watching that extra football game, just learning a little bit along the way is going to benefit you later down the road.
Yeah, and it's very true. Lots of promises made, and I mean, we saw it happen, well, North American Dental Board and Dental Group, and then the other West Coast one, where all these owners go to recap and they have no equity. And all those promises, they didn't happen. And we're starting to see that. I think there's a lot of people that aren't understanding it completely what they're getting into or what they're getting to. A lot of promises.
A lot of promises. And maybe they didn't read the fine print. Maybe they didn't have a good enough attorney that understood selling to a DSO. You got to know that you're rolling the dice a little bit on that recap or what they call equity event. I've actually gone through the process once, Paul, to get an evaluation with the asking me for the same paperwork 18 times, giving them everything from literally down to almost the birth certificate of my daughter, to understanding how they come up with their EBITDA, to know their multiplier, and then making sure what kind of stock you're getting, whether it's the Class A stock, whether they're going to recap, what the other vertical platform, if it did recap or not. There's so much, because it's like I call them Wall Street wolves. They're not dentists who run these things, right? They're really good at making a lot of money. That's why these people are super wealthy. They went to school and got businesses degree at Harvard and Wharton Business School. That's not dentists. And so they feast on dentists who don't even understand what they're... Most dentists don't even run a P&L, Paul.
Yeah,
right?
True.
And if they do, they don't even know what the P&L means. So it's like the low-hanging fruit. They're easy prey. It's like the newborn calf on the Serengeti. It's too easy to pick off dentists. All I'm saying is if you don't understand it, learn, because there's a lot of people like yourself that can educate them. And then make sure you hire an attorney who has done this over and over and over again, and that can carefully explain it to you in a way that you can digest it and make your best possible decision.
Yeah, because it's very new. It's true. Talk about protocol. Talk about what you guys are doing and your courses coming up, and if somebody, how the listeners can find out more about what you offer.
So if you go to theprotocollive.com, theprotocollive.com, you can actually sign up there. You can sign up right with the link. We offer the course 4 times a year. It's for people who have really, I was going to say for people who really believe in CE. I've had people come 6 months out of dental school, take the course. And I've had two people come, older dentists who have been doing it for 35 years and they took the course. So it's not just for somebody that's new out of school or at the end of the career. We've had everything in between. What I find interesting, I'll use that word, is you'll go and you'll spend $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 on education, some of the finest curriculums in dentistry. And then you go home and you implement nothing, which is kind of sad to me. It's sad because you're taking time away from your family. You're spending that kind of money to learn the best education, and it is great education, but then you don't do it. I mean, I'm not going to say where, but there are times you'll go and you'll talk to these people who are the people that help out, and you'll say, well, how much of this dentistry do you? Oh, no, I don't have that kind of practice. So they're the ones teaching you how to do it, but they don't even do it in their own practice, which I find troubling. So what me and my partner came up with is said, if we're going to do our own course, because I didn't want to lecture anymore, Paul. I used to lecture 25 to 35 times a year, get on a plane. Mm-hmm. Coming out of Florida is not fun. Said after COVID, I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I'd rather have them come to me and me teach them and share with them my experiences over 25, 27 years and how to implement this in their practice. So we cover everything that they don't. So if you went to Coy Spear, Panky Dawson, and then you go back to your practice and you're either mounting all these cases or equilibrating cases or putting everybody in night guards or still doing single tooth dentistry. Meanwhile, you're looking at these patients who are overclosed, first premolar extractions, wear on their interior teeth. And you're thinking, what do I do here? I can show you how to get these people into your practice, how to actually open up the vertical consistently and do an arch or two arches of dentistry with the information that you've learned other places. This course is not a replacement for any one of those fine teaching curriculums. And if anything, it's an addendum course to all of them. And I cannot tell you how many people have come to the course. They go back to their office, and usually a week later, we get a call or a text. Oh my gosh, I took what I learned in the protocol, and in the first week alone, I sold 4 arches of dentistry utilizing your guys' technique. Mm-hmm. Wow. Now you've got the skill set that you've got for the rest of your career. It completely changes the vertical in your practice, right? Because your numbers are going to take off because you're doing better dentistry. You've got complete control of the arch. You're feeling good about what you're doing because, you've got control. You can make the teeth look great, but most importantly, functionally, you're setting these people up for the next 10, 15, 20 years of their lives. For us, it's been the most rewarding thing I've ever done. And it's not just the type of dentistry. During the breakout sessions, we do live, interactive, chairside digital consults. You'll spend time with our team members who are there to answer questions about how we bring new patients in, what we say to them, how we collect money on the consultations to move forward with the cases. Paul, not to brag, but just to tell you, this week I sold 2 full mouths. Mm-hmm. Doing it the same way. I don't make anything up along the way. There's a certain way that we do it, and the certain way that we present it, and the certain way that we say it. And then my treatment coordinator comes to me and says they just left their deposit. I mean, once you get in the cycle of anything else, right, it's just doing it the same way over and over again, once you learn the right way of doing it. And that's what we just share with everybody. We give you a cookbook. We give you all the materials that we show you how to use. What's really cool is you get a Pelican case with $1,700 worth of materials that were given to us by the dental companies. And then you get 16 CE hours. We feed you. And then you go back and you just do it exactly the same way. And short of me flying in to prep the case for you, I don't know what else I can do for you to make this happen. So it's a great couple of days. It will change your life. It'll change your career. It really will.
That's awesome. Well, theprotocollive.com, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, awesome. So we're coming up on time. Just final question. I guess if you had to pick one piece of advice for a practice owner or soon-to-be practice owner, what would that one piece be?
It's always the same. I think you hear it all the time, right? You got to get a mentor. You got to get a coach, a mentor. How many times have been said Tiger Woods had one? I mean, anybody that's successful has had a mentor, a guide, a coach. I read a book called The Talent Code. Have you read it?
No, I have not. I've heard of that though. I see it pop up.
So there's a couple parts to it, but I'll just take out one section. We kind of cover this a little bit. Sometimes the mentor that you have to start is not the mentor that you need moving forward. You might start with one mentor and then you're like, I don't need this anymore. I need something else. So you might find something else, somebody else to help you. Because in the book, they talk about ignition, and ignition is that one person that lights a spark that starts the whole thing for you. Just because you start with one mentor doesn't mean that they're going to be there for you all 30 years of career or 15 years of career. But without a mentor, you need somebody that you can trust and talk to, that you can run ideas off of, that on the great days you can expound on it, and on the bad days, they're a voice of reason. And because we live in a roller coaster profession, unfortunately, and it is a roller coaster, you need somebody there. And it can't always be your wife or your significant other, your husband, because they can get burned out listening to this if they're not in the profession, even if they are in the profession. So I think having a mentor, having a guide, and I've had quite a few to get me to where I am. I couldn't have done this by myself. I think that's really a very important part of our profession. I think it's a great thing to have. And I think there's a lot of good ones out there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, thank you. Well, dude, Rob, thanks so much, man. I mean, we went so many different directions, but I think you're spot on, man. I love your philosophy and the way you run your practice. And I love the way that you think about the authenticity in dentistry and the speaking circuit and stuff. And man, I'm interested in your course. I'm going to be honest. I kind of want to come down and see what it's all about. And it's always nice to go down to Florida, especially this time of year. I mean, we're recording this in January.
Actually, the next course is February. Then the one after it's sold out in February. The next one's in May. So those are the nicest times of the years to come, really. We have them. It's always the same. It's February, May, August, and November. And the nicest times really are November, February, and May, just because the weather is nicer. August is a little warm, but we're inside anyway. Believe me, I just had new air conditioners put in the practice. So it's nice and cool in the practice. But yeah, you should come on down. It's a lot of fun. And I always tell people, you're going to come, bring a friend. I can't tell you how many people have come with two or three friends. It's a shared experience. They just have the best. We take care of everything for you, Paul. We feed you gourmet breakfast, lunch, and then we take you out to 1000 North, which is partially owned by Michael Jordan's restaurant. It's the nicest restaurant up in Jupiter overlooking the lighthouse. It's just a great 2 days. It really is.
Yeah, awesome, man. Well, thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Paul. Great chatting with you.
Were you one of the lucky dentists that got a tax surprise this year? Nothing like thinking that you have more money only to get that wiped away by a tax return. Or are you wondering why you are driving blind all year long, not knowing what your expenses are, what they should be, or how they compare to other dentists just like you? Enter Bull Moose Financial, a full-service accounting firm to handle your payroll, bookkeeping, tax compliance, tax returns and filings, as well as tax planning. And by tax planning, I mean knowing what you're going to owe well before the year is even over. I'm Paul Etchison, and I endorse working with Bull Moose. They were my CPA for many years, and if you want a responsive dental-specific CPA that will free you up from the burden of bookkeeping, payroll, and be attentive to your special needs as a dental practice owner, go to bullmoosefinancial.com. That's Bull, B-U-L-L, moosefinancial.com. Mention the Dental Practice Heroes podcast, and they will waive your $2,000 onboarding fee. So sign yourself up, and rest assured you know your CPA is doing all they can do to help and support your dental practice.